This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, thanks for being here this afternoon, covering a lot of things with a variety of topics on the program. Matt Hill is here today, Executive Director of the Douglas Timber Operators. Thanks for coming in.
Pleasure to be here.
So we're going to cover quite a bit of ground here as we look at the work of your organization, but a lot of related things that you're focused on. One of the big things, and of course the anniversary was just over a month ago, was looking at the impact. Here we are 3 years later, after the Archie Creek fires. I'm curious about the last time you drove up that direction and your thoughts looking at the situation 3 years later.
Well, I see the edges of the Archie Creek fire every time I go home at night because I live in Glide and can see it where it popped over the ridge into the Little River drainage. But I go up there quite a bit. I was up there filming over August and July, just looking at what the landscape looks like on federal and private land, and for the most part, all the private land has been salvaged, the site prepped, most of it reforested. Most of those trees are well on their way to reestablishing the next forest. Whereas on federal land, the activity, if there's any activity, is done. Most of the area was left as it was after the fire, and has grown back in a very different condition. You see different trees, shrubs, hardwoods, plants coming back, not necessarily forest. And when you drive along the highway, and particularly when you go up into some of the upper reaches, what you'll see is an area that is coming back as shrubs and bushes, as maples instead of dug firs and pines, and that's what that is going to look like for 100 or several hundred years.
And what about the impact of that growth pattern in terms of being more of a danger for potentially future fires?
The landscape up there on the federal land is a sea of dead snags. It's just air-dried firewood standing there waiting for the next fire. And what we've seen in Douglas County when that happens, in past fires where the federal agencies were forced to or chose to leave the majority of dead wood, over time the understory grows up, those shrubs and bushes and hardwoods. Those dead trees start falling down onto the ground and breaking off. And when the next fire comes in there, it is far more intense and behaves far differently than other fires, which puts adjacent landowners at risk, whether those are adjacent timber landowners or homes. And I think looking out 10, 15, 20 years, we're gonna see some really intense reburns as a result of the decisions that were made.
And do you see any movement from the federal level at addressing that?
I think they are trying to do what they can locally, given the rules they have. The challenge is that the rules governing the management of federal forest lands in Douglas County are at odds with the situation that we're seeing with respect to fire behavior, repeated fires over time. And it doesn't allow them to do what needs to be done on the ground like we're able to do on private land, and that's a major problem.
And what do you see in terms of rebuilding of homes up there? Is there much of that going on yet?
There's some. I don't have the exact statistic in my mind, but if you drive up Rock Creek, you'll see homes in the Susan Creek area. You'll see homes that have been rebuilt and reoccupied, but there are many, many homes that have not been rebuilt. And the people that were affected by the fire are still displaced. They're not back on their property or where they were living before. And that's a concern. I read a story in the Oregonian today about how the state of Oregon had promised hundreds of millions of dollars to help rebuild housing for the 2020 fires. It didn't look like any of those were planned in the Archie Creek area. Most of them were in Medford and the San Yam. So I don't know how much, if any, assistance the state of Oregon is providing. Down here, it's primarily a factor of, you know, if you're insured or insured enough to rebuild.
Well, and you also have, in any of these fires, you've got issues. It's not as simple as just starting the rebuilding process of a building. I mean, sometimes you've got water or sewer or other things that were compromised, or maybe even, parts of roads that were heavily damaged, too.
Yeah, and the forests around, change the site in terms of water availability, temperature. A lot of people had timber as their retirement savings, and that generally was not insured, and so that just changes the calculation of what they're able to do up there.
Well, as well, along with the retirement aspect and the financial impact, there is the part that you have all this different land where people, may have had some newer trees, some 10, 20 years old further on back, and had plans looking for the future. But now it's like, making a meal with no ingredients. You're starting over at zero. And even if you go in and replant the way you want to do, you're not going to have any return for decades.
Yeah, certainly not in your lifetime if you're, older than 40 years of age. And from a timber industry standpoint, that's also a concern, because the 2020 fires throughout Western Oregon significantly impacted various age classes of timber inventory that was planned to be harvested over time, from 0 to 50 years out. And that is going to have repercussions on the availability of wood for our local manufacturers, and makes even more important the outputs from federal lands, and that's not looking good either.
Well, and let's talk about the federal timber program. It's been a few decades since it really changed things in the county. What's the latest in terms of harvest levels for the Forest Service and the BLM?
Well, for the Forest Service, the Umpqua National Forest and other western forests are governed by the Northwest Forest Plan. You may recall this came down in the Clinton administration in response to the ESA listing of the Northern Spotted Owl. That plan has been in place for over 25 years. It has not had the result that people wanted, either from the environmental standpoint or the economic outputs, and has just not been successful any way you look at it. And so there has been the formation of a national advisory committee to review the Northwest Forest Plan and make recommendations to the Forest Service. That's being done here regionally, and there's representatives from both the environmental community, tribes, and industry. But they're being asked to turn around recommendations in a year and then have those translate into new changes for the Forest Service. So we're watching that one. For the BLM, you've got national litigation that may be heading to the Supreme Court over the management of the ONC lands and what that means. But in terms of targets, timber outputs right now, both the Forest Service and BLM are not even hitting their minimum targets. And I'll give you an example. At its peak, the Umpqua National Forest was harvesting between 400 and 600 million board feet of timber a year. Under the Northwest Forest Plan, their target is somewhere around 75. Their current target is 35, and their accomplishment is 17. So a tiny fraction of what their historic harvest level was, which was less than the growth rate of the forest, but even a small fraction of what their proposed target under the Northwest Forest Plan is. So they're not able to meet even minimum standards. The same is true for the BLM. I think they're trying very hard, but they've been given a very difficult set of rules. Their target, they're hitting less than 70% of their bottom line target, which is a minimum. And so we've got a problem. And with all the wood that is being decimated in fires, the feds have to be able to meet at least these minimum targets, or else we're in serious jeopardy here.
Wow. And what do you think it will take to change that?
Either a Supreme Court decision or a major change in statutory direction from Congress. Because right now, The courts are telling the Forest Service and BLM how they should manage and what they should cut and what they shouldn't cut. And these judges are not accountable to the public. You know, you get a lifetime appointment. It's pretty nice. But they're impacting forest management. They're giving conflicting direction to forest management, and it's making it impossible for federal forest managers. And so we've got to take it out of the courts and have a better public discussion about what outputs we want from these forests, from recreation to wildlife to timber.
All right, more when we come back. Matt Hill, Executive Director of the Douglas Timber Operators, the interview a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1246 at News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson coming at 1. On Inside Douglas County, Matt Hill, Executive Director of the Douglas Timber Operators. We've been covering forestry topics, a lot of things related to it to talk about as well. What about the state of the local industry? How are your members faring in these economic times?
Well, it's a cyclical economy, for sure, for forest products, and our manufacturers are braving the ups and downs. From a land management standpoint, you know, there are timber landowners like Lone Rock and companies like Roseburg and Sierra. I mean, everyone's just taking a sigh of relief after fire season and seeing quite a flurry of activity here locally, and learning lessons from that, improving cooperation with, you know, the state and federal resources on forest fires and making sure that we're getting ramped up for next year. So that's an ongoing process as well. But, you know, markets are beginning to soften a little bit for lumber. You know, having astronomical mortgage rates for homes and home construction doesn't help. So we're seeing a slowdown there. So it's the usual up and down, but, you know, our industry is strong and had a good couple of years that was able to pay off debt if they had it, invest in new technology, and get ready for the roller coaster ride ahead.
Do you feel like there was a difference in how incidents like the Tyee Ridge Complex were fought this year?
Well, that was primarily fought with DFPA and state resources, as well as with our private landowner firefighters who, there was a Good News Review story about how that cooperative system works. It's a seamless system of fire protection and prevention. And I think it worked very well. We've got people out in the woods who know the area, they know the road system, they know the fuel situation. They're able to respond to those fires much better than having a team from Alaska, you know, get airdropped in and spend 2 weeks trying to figure out what the fire looks like. It's just different systems of firefighting, and it did very well.
I was surprised, though, as I, you know, would just be in the community, how many vehicles were from out of state, you know, Colorado, Arizona, lots of other locations that were in. And there also seemed, there was, and I am terrible at getting aircraft properly identified, but there were some big tankers that were pulled in, I think through the National Guard or something like that, that seemed to make a big dent. And a lot of people were surprised to see that level of push against the fire.
Yeah, your availability of aircraft depends on what's happening on the national priority system. So I think we were blessed to have a relatively mild season in terms of wildfire. Oregon usually burns later in the season than other states. And so we don't always get the first pick of those assets like air tankers, heavy lift helicopters, and the seats. But this year it appeared like we got good use of them, and they were put to good use and helped to assist the ground operations.
Now, for people that were at the fairgrounds this year, something new. Tell us about the pavilion.
Yeah, Douglas Timber Operators, we spent the better part of the year building a new timber frame pavilion at the Douglas County Fairgrounds next to kind of between Douglas Hall and the Exhibit Hall. It is in a place that DTO usually had a tent during the fair to provide for public education about forestry, forest management, wildfire, those types of things. And we finally built a permanent structure that we will continue to use for that purpose, and we'll find other ways to provide for that public education on forestry. It's made of primarily Doug fir, some big beams that were donated by Starfire Lumber in Cottage Grove, but the wood came from here. The roofing is incense cedar from C&D Lumber, with major cash contributions from some of our members like Sierra Pacific, Roseburg, Lone Rock, and so on. It's 40 by 60 open air pavilion that the fairgrounds will be able to use for many different things. I talked to the fair today. I think they're going to have some heavy equipment from the sheriff's office there for the sportsman's show coming up, like the Snowcat and things like that. It's a great structure. We're proud of it and hope to just remind the community of the permanent presence of this industry.
It seemed like the open air aspect really lent to a lot more visibility for whatever was going, and it provided you some protection from the sun, but yet you were outside and everybody could see you.
Yeah, it felt like it was 10 degrees cooler than it normally is at the fair. Normally we're doing hot yoga in there and sweating it out for a week, but it felt pretty good. And we had a great display of historic chainsaws from the Douglas County Museum that people enjoyed looking at, and I don't think many people can lift those anymore. There were some big hunks of metal in there.
Wow. Speaking of the museum, now you're involved with the Museum Foundation, right?
Yes. Yeah, I'm the president of the Museum Foundation Board of Directors right now, and honored to do so.
So how did you get tied in with that?
Oh, I was volunteered by someone when I didn't show up for something.
What often happens, yeah.
Yeah. I was asked to join a couple of years ago by one of the board members, and it's a great organization that's designed to support the museum and its exhibits and staffing and what it's able to do. And so we've got a good group of people on the foundation and raising money, raising attention and awareness, and just trying to get people to visit our museum system, which includes not only the Douglas County Museum at the fairgrounds, but also the Umpqua Lighthouse Complex over at the coast.
And among the exhibits that are in there, I know, do we still have the one tied to Archie Creek?
Yes, the Archie Creek exhibit will continue through the rest of this year, probably into early next year, so you can still go in there and see a collection of photographs, audio recordings of 911 calls, videos that were taken during the fire, and interviews with first responders and fire survivors.
And a lot of that is from what you put together, right?
Yes, a lot of it. I just kind of ended up being the repository of pictures and video from people who were on the front lines, and was able to process that into video format and an archive of some of those stories.
And the foundation, I understand, would like to work on that ONC rail car.
Yes, we have a great rail car next to the Dillard rail station that's out there. The rail car is in the process of being renovated. There's windows and wood stove and all sorts of things that are being replaced and updated to give the public the ability to walk through the car and feel what it felt like when it was in operation, just like when you can walk through the rail station, which is a great experience. But we still have a lot to do and are trying to get some resources raised for that.
I would imagine it's a costly process, just given the age of that. It's not like there are parts on a shelf somewhere at a store.
No, there's a lot of custom work that needs to be done, and one of our board members, Dale Greenlee, is heavily involved in that project and making good progress, and I think the end is in sight.
And you've got a special author event coming up in a few days. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this Saturday, the 7th, the Douglas County Museum will be hosting a book signing event with local author Linda Jones Weber, who was I believe she's of the Weber Bakery family heritage, if people remember that on Jackson Street. I think Roseburg High School, I won't give the year, but somewhere in the 60s or 70s. And she is an acclaimed author and will be joining a crowd of people there to talk about her new book, which is, I have not read it yet. My understanding is it's historical fiction based on actual historical characters who moved from Texas and the Midwest to Oregon and became families here in the Roseburg area. And so people might know some of the descendants of those families.
And what time is that event?
That is from 4 to 6 p.m. on Saturday. And there will be refreshments provided and door prizes and raffle prizes and all sorts of fun things. So I encourage people to go if they can.
Well, and we'll be talking to the author later in the week at a morning conversation segment as well. Matt Hill from the Douglas Timber Operators, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Kyle.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.